This is Owen Thompson with the Local Journalism Initiative. The long list for the Toronto 2023 Book Awards has been announced. The long list comprises 13 books of various genres and authors. The authors of the 13 novels will go on in October to find out who has won the 2023 Book Awards with a grand prize of $15,000. I recently spoke to two of the authors who have made it on this year's long list. Notable return to the long list is 2007's finalist and award-winning author Vincent Lamb with his new novel On the Ravine. The second interview is with Shelley Murray, who has made it onto the long list with her debut novel Finding Edward. In both interviews, we touch upon what the novels are about, their writing process, and what it means to them to be on the long list. Please be kind and give an introduction of who you are.
Sure. My name is Vincent Lamb. I am a writer. I live and work in Toronto. And in addition to working as a writer, I also work as a physician in this amazing city.
And how long have you been writing for?
I have been writing since around the age of 14 or 15. I won a short story competition when I was 15, which was a great experience and was wonderful because I met a lifelong friend, Ann Michaels.
If you can recall, what was the short story about?
The short story that I wrote when I was 15 years old was about a family crossing the border from Canada into the U.S. during a snowstorm. And they were questioned in a difficult and uncomfortable way for a Chinese-Canadian family by the U.S. immigration authorities.
And when did you have your first novel published?
Well, my first book, which was published, was Bloodletting and Miraculous Cures. That was published in 2006. It was a collection of linked short stories. And then my first novel, The Headmaster's Wager, which was about a Chinese gambler in Vietnam during the war in Vietnam, was published in 2012.
So alongside writing these novels, you were also pursuing a medical career at the same time. Is that correct?
That's right. I spent the first part of my medical career as an emergency physician at a hospital, which was then known as the Toronto East General Hospital, and is now called Michael Garron Hospital. And now the last decade or so, I've been working in addiction medicine.
Where did you find the time to pursue this writing as well as working as a doctor?
Well, I think finding time is this notion that suggests that time is just out there and we kind of have to stumble across it and there it is. And I find that for me, both of these things are so important. Medicine is so important and writing is so important that I carve out the time. I seek out the time and I, you know, figure it out, right? I mean, these are both activities which are incredibly intrinsic to who I am in the world. And so I absolutely just need to make time to do both of them.
And how does your work as a doctor and a physician and an addictions specialist, you could say, how does that cross over into your writing work?
Well, there are both similarities and differences between medicine and writing. Fundamentally, one of the great similarities is that both medicine and writing are about human stories. They're about the journeys that each of us are taking through the world, through our own lives. And then, of course, there are differences. In medicine, what happens generally is that people bring me some sort of problem they're facing and privilege me with being involved in trying to address that problem and trying to help in their journey. Writing, of course, I just, you know, come across the problems myself and then have to solve my own problems. So they're ultimately both narrative arts and they're ultimately both engaged in the world, I think, in a very important way.
And so this brings me to your latest novel, On the Ravine, which follows a doctor who is in the addictions field and I guess a patient who has recently suffered two overdoses. With this novel, are you drawing from your, I guess, fairly recent work at this addictions clinic?
On the Ravine is definitely situated in a world that I know very well. It's situated in the world of the current opioid crisis. And while it's situated in that world, it's very much a work of fiction. In this new novel, On the Ravine, two of the characters from Bloodletting and Miraculous Cures, two of the doctors, Chen and Fitzgerald, return. And they're a little bit more experienced in the world. They have a different vantage point on certain things, and their relationship has evolved. And within this particular point in time, there is also a patient who comes into both of their lives. And this patient, whose name is Claire, is a gifted and wonderful violinist who wants deeply to make beautiful music. And she has also had opioids come into her life, and opioids are affecting her in very serious and difficult ways. And so this is really a novel about people of medicine trying to help this young violinist and trying to grapple with a city, Toronto, which is also coming to terms with this really serious problem.
And how much of your personal and work life bleeds into your latest work?
Well, On the Ravine is absolutely a fictional work, and it's one in which I know the world because I inhabit the world. And I think that's really how many writers work. We understand the world that we live in, and we understand a lot of what ifs. And so that's often the territory that I inhabit. Things may happen a certain way in my actual work as a doctor, and then I may be left wondering, well, what if? You know, what if things happened slightly differently? Or what if things happened in a way that was surprising or in some way expressive of a hope that I have? And that is really the territory that I inhabit when I'm writing about a world which I know, but which is a world of fiction.
And with this novel, it has recently been on, or is now currently on, the 2023 Toronto Book Awards long list. Is this your first time on this list?
Well, I believe I've been on the Toronto Book Award long list and maybe the short list at some point in the past, if I'm not mistaken, for my first book, Bloodletting and Miraculous Cures. And so it's really an honor to be on the long list again. This is a really, really cool award. And I think one of the really neat things about the Toronto Book Award is that there's no categories. It's open to everything, to fiction, nonfiction, children's books, poetry. It's just wide open. Books that have something to do with Toronto by authors who have some connection in Toronto and don't even have to live here. And that's kind of like Toronto. Toronto is a bit like that. You know, it's a big city. It's cosmopolitan. There's tons of stuff going on. Same thing for the Toronto Book Award. So I think that's part of what makes it a really cool book award. And I was looking at the list of past winners. There's some really cool book names. And so the best one that I have found, in fact, is The Revenge of the Methodist Bicycle Company, which was the 1978 winner of the Toronto Book Award. And if that doesn't make you want to read, I don't know what will.
When did you find out that you were on this year's long list?
Well, the Toronto Book Award people announced the long list yesterday. And so here we are with On the Ravine on the Toronto Book Award long list. Pretty cool.
How did you find out that you were on the long list?
I think it just, you know, in my social media, my email, someone let me know.
And when you found out that you were on this list, what was going through your mind?
Yeah, I was very excited, very pleased. It's always great to be in the company of fellow writers. And there's just such a great list of exciting books apart from my own, which are on this list. And so it's just really, really cool to be amongst peers who also have a passion for books and a passion for Toronto.
When it comes to, I guess, the long list, every year, because it's been going on quite a while now. When you write, and like, is there like a hope to, when you finish and publish something, to get on to like the long list or the short list?
I don't think you can really write thinking about long lists and short lists and prizes and all that stuff. I mean, writing is just such a completely different headspace. Writing ultimately, at least the way I do it, is very internal, it's very personal, and it's very much a process in which I really need to enter the world of the fictional place that I'm writing about. So I really needed to inhabit the world of On the Ravine, which of course is set in Toronto, but when you write a book, the world of the book is also its own thing. And so for me, I need to enter the character of Claire, the violinist who is struggling with opioids. I need to enter the character of Chen, the doctor who is trying to help this patient and trying to do the best that he can, and yet he's coming up against obstacles. And I need to be walking in the ravines of Toronto where these worlds meet for Chen and Claire and Fitz. And that takes a lot of headspace. I mean, that's an immersive experience and an immersive piece of engagement for me. And so honestly, the last thing that I'm thinking about when I'm writing is things like prizes and, you know, long list and short list and all that stuff. Not to say that stuff isn't good. Of course, it's really exciting. It's great for books. It's really important to celebrate books. But I just think that they do exist on this parallel track, you know, this kind of different plane than the actual writing of books, which is both more personally intense and also quieter.
On that same note that you brought up, what do you do to get into that headspace to write?
Well, mostly I just work, you know, like it's such a, it's such a non-romantic, non-sexy answer, but yeah, you know, I sit down and I work, I write, and sometimes I sit down and I write and I really don't feel like it. And through the work, I get there. And sometimes I feel really moved to do something and I can't wait to sit down and it really comes to life exactly as I'd hoped. And sometimes I feel really excited about the work. I've got this great idea. And when I sit down, you know, it kind of doesn't work and I have to change my plans. For me, writing is very much this process of me engaging with thoughts, imagination, this world, and just doing it through work, you know, just working away at it until it becomes what I imagine and what I hope it could be. And so that's my process. And that was certainly my process for On the Ravine. It's a book I've been working on for 8 years now, and it's seen many twists and turns, you know, pages written which are no longer in the book, things I imagined which were important to imagine, important to work through, but, you know, in the end, weren't right for the book. The thing which is really amazing for me, for all the books that I've written, is that at the end of that process, you know, which is very much kind of a sit down and do the work sort of process, at the end of it seems to coalesce in this way that feels right. It seems to coalesce as if it was just meant to be that way. And yet the getting there often didn't feel as elegant. You know, the getting there was lots of just plain old work.
You talked about how it took you about 8 long years and a lot of scrapped pages. Were there any moments in the book that were difficult for you to write? Like they stumped you for a really long time of how to progress the plot in the way you wanted to?
There are a lot of difficult things in On the Ravine. And this is an exploration of the human experience of opioid use disorder. And that is an incredibly visceral and incredibly difficult human journey. And so inherently that's difficult to write about. And I think because it's a difficult journey, it's also a journey that people need to have an appreciation for in its full human expression, its full human hope as well as suffering. And so to me, that is inherently difficult. And at the same time, it's inherently so important, because when we see issues around opioid use and opioid use disorder in the headlines, it's often very simplified, right? And when things are very simplified and perhaps overly simplified, then it's easy for people to jump to easy conclusions, to make stereotypes and judgments, which perhaps lack a full human appreciation of the person who is having that experience. So for me, that is really one of the most important roles of fiction, to be able to inhabit human experiences. And so I hope that On the Ravine inhabits the deeply human experiences of people who are experiencing opiate use disorder and those who are trying to help folks who use opioids and who are experiencing opiate use disorder. You know, those are the things that I really grappled with in terms of writing the book. In terms of plot and structure, I have to say I'm really never very good at plot and structure. I fumble around a lot. I try different things. I wish I could kind of map it out more. And so for me, it's often a process of trying different things, seeing what works, scrapping some things, and leaving the things that work. So it's never straightforward for me in terms of plot and structure, but I've kind of resigned myself to that as a writer, and that's the way it goes for me. And at the end, it feels like things are happening the way they should in the journeys of my characters.
Okay, so this will be my last question. As you're writing this novel on the ravine, it took you, you said it took you about 8 years. And within that 8 years, the topics of addiction and opioids has become more and more relevant and prominent in the media. Was this surprising to you when, as you were writing this novel, and was that able to help you guide your way through the human experience that you're aiming for with your novel?
Well, I have always understood in a really deep way that issues around addiction and issues around opiate use disorder are deeply human and deeply important. And so that awareness and that understanding was always part of my sense of the world in working on this novel, On the Ravine. I think you're absolutely right. I think that this has become an issue of greater media coverage and greater, for better or for worse, political consequence. But most importantly, we're seeing it for what it is, which is that we're seeing it as being an incredibly important human issue for Canadians. And so I'm glad that it's being given that attention because it is a tremendously important issue. We have to make sure that we're approaching it with a sense of thoughtfulness and an awareness of the people who are impacted and a sense of what their journeys. And I really think this is part of where fiction offers us a different and important vantage point. On the Ravine is a novel which I wrote because I'm moved by this issue, and equally I'm moved by the characters whom I wanted to write about. You know, it's a book which speaks to me on many levels, and I hope that On the Ravine will speak to readers who are interested in both of these issues, who are, yes, interested in issues around substance use and opioid use disorder, but who are also interested in a beautifully talented young violinist who is trying to make her way in the world, and an idealistic doctor who is trying to do his best, and his friend, also a doctor, who has his own challenges and is trying to navigate them. And so this is what novels give us, right? They're messy, they're complex, and they give us perhaps an insight into human issues, which doesn't give us easy answers, but again, hopefully gives us a vision of the journey that people are sometimes on. And this is the kind of book which On the Ravine hopes to be.
To start off this interview, would you mind introducing yourself?
Yes, my name is Sheila Murray, and I am the author of my debut novel, Finding Edward, which was published in June 2022.
Could you please provide a brief synopsis of your novel, Finding Edward?
So Finding Edward is, in brief synopsis, it's about a young man who arrives from Jamaica. He's around 20 when he gets to Toronto from Jamaica. What you need to know about him is that he comes not because he'd wanted to particularly, but because everybody thought it would be the best thing for him to do after his mother died. And he's mixed race. His dad was white, English, and his mum black Jamaican, and his dad left the family when Cyril, who was the name of the 22-year-old, or 20-year-old, sorry, was around 2 years old. And while he's in Toronto, Cyril comes across the sort of evidence of a boy who was born in Toronto in the very early 1920s, who also happened to be mixed race and had a white mother who had abandoned him and a black father who had disappeared somewhere early on. That little boy was Edward, and it's Cyril's search for Edward that takes us through the book. And in many ways, it's a sort of it's coming of age, a year for Cyril. The year is 2012 in Toronto, but also a look back at Edward's history in Canada.
How long did it take you to write this novel?
I'm asked that question and I can't really answer it because the novel has sort of languished for many years in a file on my computer. I wrote 2 or 3 drafts and was very happy with the most recent draft, but couldn't find a publisher. So it was 10 years, I think, between the sort of start of that, the writing and the actual publication.
Inspired you to write this novel, specifically about your main character finding this boy, in the 1920s?
I should say that I am mixed race myself. My dad was black Jamaican. My mother was white English. Both died. And I had a very happy childhood and came to Canada myself when I was about 17 with my family from England. So I have the immigrant experience to some degree, but mine was a very easy transition, I think. But I was very curious over time, sort of thinking about the black experience in Canada and how fraught it can be for so many people, and how indeed things seem to change, but they don't change. So really everything changes and nothing changes. And that was my sort of starting point. I wanted to know not just about the black experience in Canada over time, but also really question what it means to be brown, what it means to be of a mixed ethnicity. And there are so many of us, of course, in Canada now, well, certainly in Toronto and Montreal and other places. And I really wanted to ask questions about what that means. And of course, it has consequences. The sort of racialization of folk has consequences, and many of them are not good. So I'm very interested in those sorts of questions. And I think, you know, I mean, at heart, it's a book about two people who, one of whom is a lonely guy who sort of finds a strong connection to this person whose existence, he knows very little about, but I in part it sort of gets him through that first lonely year in Toronto. But Edward's life, I think, is a real sort of glimpse into what life was like for many people, not just racialized people, but many people, men who had lived through the Depression and the war and so on. So and I really enjoyed doing that research.
In writing this novel, were you able to find any answers to these questions you were writing about?
I don't know that I have any answers. I still believe that while everything seems to change, many things don't really change. They seem to change on the surface, but so I think a lot of things. I certainly don't have any answers there. And in terms of what it means to be brown, I think that's a conversation that needs to be ongoing. And I mean, it's really obviously an important question as we sort of as a society try and figure out, you know, help people sort of understand. I think what systemic racism is. I think that's not a term that's necessarily well understood, and I think we would all of us be better off if we if we understood it, could sort of confront it and overturn it. And so, but again, I sure don't have any answers, but I'm really very interested in the conversation. And one of the things that I really have enjoyed about having this book published is the conversation that comes with it. So many people have said to me, having read the book, you know, there are things that they've simply never thought about. And I think, and I feel really, really pleased to have you know, encouraged that sort of new thinking. Amazing though it seems, you know, these are simply issues that lots of people don't reflect upon at all. Of course, the reason they've started that sort of thinking is because there are two characters in the book who I think are very accessible for everybody, and they make that kind of reflection and consideration possible. Well, so I'm told by readers, and I really appreciate that.
So you mentioned it a little earlier, but you said that there were previous drafts of your novel Finding Edward over the course of the 10 or more years of writing. Let me phrase it like this. Was there anything in those previous drafts that you were maybe saddened or hesitant to cut out of the final and draft?
That's a great question. I can say that the first draft had five characters in it, two of whom were white, Cyril and Edward were made four, and then the fifth person who was a sort of mix of other ethnicities. So I had a sort of a bunch of folk who came together variously and explored the same sort of challenge of uncovering Edward's history, but they did it in some ways together, these other four people. And I really enjoyed all of those characters. I liked them a lot. But readers I didn't have that many readers, but certainly the people who did look at that early draft said, you have to lose all of those other three people, because this story is about Cyril and Edward, and when you introduce these other folk, however interesting they are, they sort of dilute the relationship. And I wholeheartedly agreed. As I began to write a draft without those other three characters, and again, I love the characters and I spent a lot of time writing them, but what makes the novel work, and I understand this now, is the relationship, obviously, between Cyril and Edward. And it just wouldn't have ever been able to be as deep and as meaningful as it is if other people had been involved. What was most important, I think I just said this earlier, was that Cyril's experience of that first year in Toronto was a lonely one, and that really helped the relationship with Edward gel, because Edward became, even though he really existed only on paper and in libraries and archives, he became someone whose experiences Cyril could actually almost tangibly feel an experience for himself. So I was sorry to see those characters go. You spend a lot of time developing characters, and to sort of just drop them from the page is not easy. But on the other hand, when it makes sense, you'd simply move on.
This novel has also recently been on, or just announced to be on, the 2023 Toronto Book Awards long list. How did you find out that you made it on there?
I heard from my publisher that was about to happen. So I'm so thrilled with that. I lived in Toronto for a few decades, and it's a city I love. I live in Hamilton now, and I love Hamilton too. But Toronto is a very special city, and I think that the novel, honestly, because it looks not just at the sort of experience of the Cyril in 2012 in a sort of contemporary Toronto, or closer to contemporary Toronto, but also Edward was born in Toronto, so we're looking back at a Toronto that existed in the early 20s, and because Edward was born to a pretty hard scrabble, tough life. It's a look at the sort of historical places like the Ward, St. John's Ward in Toronto, and other sort of aspects of Toronto life that lots of people perhaps don't know so much about. But I found all of that really quite fascinating.
Did you ever imagine that your debut novel would make it onto this list?
No. I'm so pleased by what's happened with the novel since it was published. I didn't anticipate any of it. I was so very, very pleased to have it published at all. So just the idea of seeing the book in physical form, actually holding it in my hand, was a thrill, and I really didn't think beyond that at all. So what's happened for it since then has been just so exciting, and I'm so pleased, and I know how unusual it is, and I appreciate that. So it's been a great experience.
So that's all of my questions. Do you have any final comments you would like to leave off on?
No, not really, Owen, but I really appreciate your interest, and cross your fingers for the book. And I know it's a great list. You know, I thought, oh gosh, maybe I have a real shot at this because the book is about Toronto. And I mean, the Toronto people have, I think there was a reviewer who said Toronto was a real character in the book. And then I saw the long list and such a sort of great bunch of writers, and thought, ah, well, maybe not. So anyway, we'll see what happens.